This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Kendra asked Joseph if he got his papers. He was a little bit confused. She pushed more. Did he get served? There's a pause, and then it clicks. Oh, yes, he says. He looked at the charges once. He got a chance to glance at him. Got discouraged. Started reading some psalms. Felt much better afterward. Hasn't looked at the papers since. Joseph Duggar is sitting, or was at that time, sitting in a solitary cell at the Washington County Detention Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas. He was arrested on March 18th, 2026 by Tunneytown Police on a warrant out of Bay County, Florida. The charges? I think we've seen them before. Involved alleged harm of a child under 12 conducted by a person 18 or older, two separate charges. According to the arrest affidavit from the Bay County Sheriff's Office, a 14-year-old girl disclosed during a forensic interview that Joseph Duggar allegedly harmed her multiple times during a family vacation to Panama City Beach in 2020 when she was 9 years old. According to that same affidavit, the girl's father confronted Joseph on March 17th, and Joseph allegedly admitted to the contact and conduct. Tunneytown detectives then monitored a phone call between the father and Joseph, during which he allegedly admitted to it again. Two admissions. Two. And when the paperwork lands in his hands, the document that spells out what he's accused of doing to a child, he reads it once, puts it face down, and picks up the Book of Psalms. Felt much better afterward. Hasn't looked at the paper since. I want you to sit with that for a second. Not because it's unusual for the Duggar family, because it's not. That's the problem, that response. Don't look at the hard thing. Open the Bible, feel encouraged, move on, is exactly how this family has handled every allegation of harm against a child for over two decades. And every single person who contacts Joseph in that jail reinforces the instinct. Not one of them challenges it. Not one of them says, read the charges again, Joseph. Sit with what they say. Think about the child. Instead, they say, send psalms. We're going to go through what we've heard thus far. If you've heard the phone calls, if you've read the letters between Jim Bob and Joseph, and all the interactions that have now come to light through FOIA requests, We've gone through them. We're going to kind of give you a summary of what you're missing in case you don't want to sit through hours of Joseph Duggar on a phone call. And I don't blame you, because after about 10 minutes, you're like wanting to hit your head against a wall with the sheer amount of ignorance that comes out of this thing's mouth. And the whole family, I mean, there's a stunning level of disconnect from reality in all of it. In all of it. We're about to go through all of it with your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. Links are in the description. Anna Duggar, Josh Duggar's wife. Remember Josh? He's the one who's already in prison for child CSAM material. He's the one who, did inappropriate things with his sisters. And then the family sent him off to hang some drywall for a little bit, sent him back to go live in the same house with the same people he abused. Yeah, that guy. Well, he's still married. Anna never wised up and got the hell out of Dodge. So she's part of the problem now. She emailed Joseph on March 21st, 3 days after his arrest. And what she writes is, and it's only one of the most revealing documents in the entire case, because Anna does not write as a horrified family member processing the fact that another Duggar brother has been accused of harming a child because she's already somehow made peace in her mind with her husband being this monster. But, you know, he's a child of God and he's misunderstood and whatever other bullshit she tells herself along with the rest of the family to continue loving him, quote unquote. She writes to someone who's done this before. She tells him she put money on his books. She walks him through how phone calls work, how video visits work, how commissary has a 2-week delay, and he should figure out the timing. She tells him not to discuss anything legal outside of his attorney because everything is recorded and turned over to prosecutors. She knows all this because her husband, Josh Duggar, is currently serving a 12-and-a-half-year federal sentence after being convicted by a jury of receiving and possessing child CSAM material. She didn't learn the logistics from Google. She already knows them. And she's a wealth of knowledge to help other Christian men figure out their way through it. Hey, Anna, do you really, is this the life you really want? Is this the one you want to lead? Is this truly, are you happy? Are you happy, really? Like, oh, it's another brother. Let's give him some pointers. Wouldn't you rather, like, be nowhere near this universe? You and your kids may be somewhere far away. You can do your own religious shit. But why do you keep swimming in the pool of predators? I guess is my question. Why do you keep putting your children in the pool of predators? I'm not saying that Joseph has done anything to your kids, but I don't know. Seems like the odds are kind of high when he's already done this. Why do you continue to defend, help, enable? Maybe it's not quite a moment of defending, but the fact that you're sitting there giving point, look out for this, make sure you're a grown-ass adult. And when you're sitting there helping another predator along, you're part of the problem. I no longer, and I don't think anyone should have any more sympathy for you at this point in time anymore. You had your window to get the F out when you saw it all going down. You didn't. You chose to stay. You dug in. Now you're part of the cult. So we will treat you as such. She learned all this by living through it. She is a subject matter expert on how to onboard a family member into incarceration. Think about that. This family has now produced a person who lived experience, whose lived experience includes knowledge, knowing how commissary delays work, how to set up video visits from the outside, how to warn the new inmate that prosecutors get the recordings. This is not something that happens in a normal family. This is a family where incarceration for harming children has become a reoccurring operational problem with a known workflow. And Anna executes that workflow without a tremor in her voice. She tells Joseph she spoke with Kendra for about 30 minutes. She says Kendra was strong, focused, articulate. She calls her an amazing woman, the grace of God flowing from her life, a gem. She tells Joseph that Kendra held it together except when she talked about not being able to see her children for a month. And then Anna signs off with scripture. God is our rock. He is our fortress. And he's looking at you stupid fuckers like, what the hell happened here? Yeah, you morons. This is not what I was talking about. There ain't no chapter in the Bible of predators. And they're like, well, look out for your predator in-laws, siblings. Thou shalt shelter thine predator sibling. That's not a commandment. That's not part of the Bible. You fucking idiots. Not one word about the 9-year-old girl. Not one question about what allegedly happened. Just blindly, here's some tips and tricks on how to handle the inside. The child at the center of these charges, the entire reason Joseph is sitting in that cell, does not exist in Anna's email. Anna Duggar is onboarding her brother-in-law the way she was onboarded, with efficiency, with faith, and with the complete erasure of the person who was allegedly harmed. She is the prison wife welcoming the next prison wife, and she does it with a heart emoji. Now, let me walk you through Kendra, because what happens to this woman across these calls is something that should make every person listening furious. Not at Kendra, but at the system around her. All she knows. Kendra Duggar is 27 years old. Her husband has just been arrested on allegations of harming a kid. She herself has been arrested and charged with four counts of second degree, endangering the welfare of a minor, and four counts of second degree false imprisonment. Her children have been removed from her care. And across these recorded phone calls from Washington County, you can hear her physically breaking down in real time. She can barely eat. She tells Joseph that unless it's liquid, nothing goes down. And she says all this with nervous laughter throughout it. Her mother keeps trying. She says she's so weak, she can't walk without getting winded. She tells Joseph she's lost her laugh, her words right there. It's gone silent again, the way it was when she was really sick before. She and Joanna are comparing Oura Ring sleep scores to track who's deteriorating faster. She's getting IVs just to stay upright. He's like, oh, that's good, honey. Yeah, they can probably come to you and get you more IVs. 3 hours of sleep one night, six another. She tells Joseph she spiraled so badly that his mother, Michelle, had to carry food upstairs to her, sit with her, and pray just to pull her back from the edge. Oh, you do realize you idiots continue to fester this environment and live in it by choice, right? You all realize you have the autonomy to leave at any given time. Every last one of you. And in one call, Kendra says something that should stop every person listening cold. She says, I haven't died yet, right? So, well, I'm like, I haven't died. Yeah. Wait till the depression sets in. Oh, wait, you don't talk about or deal with that sort of shit because you're all ignorant as fuck. So you're just going to pray that shit away, I'm sure. That's where she is. That is the bar. Still breathing. Still vertical. Barely. And here's what makes me angry. Not at Kendra. At every person around her who is watching this woman disintegrate and handing her a Bible instead of a lifeline. Kendra is not getting a trauma specialist. She's not getting an independent counselor who isn't connected to the Duggar cult. She's not getting someone who can sit her down and say, what your husband is accused of is separate from your worth as a mother. And you're allowed to process both these things with professional help that has nothing to do with Psalms. Instead, she gets Michelle bringing food upstairs and praying. I got you some Hot Pockets here. She says Joseph telling her to start in Psalms because that's what helped him. She gets a system that treats scripture as therapy. Prayer as intervention and faith is the only framework a woman in crisis is allowed to accept or access. That's not support. It's actually abuse. That's a cage built out of good intentions and Bible verses. And Kendra is locked inside it while she falls apart. She tells Joseph she can't be there for him right now. She says the kids are her number one priority. I'm fighting for the kids, she says. I just want you to know through all of this, whatever happens, that's who's coming first. And then we'll just see where the rest of it leads us and try to put the pieces together. Joseph says he's 100% behind her, says she should be fighting for them the most. And that moment, Kendra, drawing a line, prioritizing her children over a man who allegedly created this disaster, is probably the most clear-headed thing anyone says across all of those recordings. She's starting to crack a little. Crack. Please crack. Not because I want ill for you, but because you need to break and you need to crack to get the hell out of Dodge, to get away from this cult family. They ain't gonna do you any good. Unless you find pride in being married to a predator. Is that something that you had on your bingo card for life? Bingo! My husband's a predator. Yeah, go sit through that. That seems like a lovely path. You can choose your plight in life there, Kendra. Doesn't have to be this. I know you got kids. I know it's quite a feat, but you know what? Women do it every day. They get up, they get out of horrible relationships. They survive, they move on, they do better for their kids and for themselves, and they don't get gaslit by these assholes named the Duggars. You fell into a cult. But even that clarity gets swallowed because within minutes, the conversation circles back to devotionals, to staying encouraged, to which psalms are the most comforting. The system always pulls them back. And while Kendra breaks down, Joseph thrives. He tells her he went into his prayer closet and had a really good time praying for her, for the kids, for Joy, for Michelle. His prayer closet. That's what Joseph Duggar calls his solitary confinement cell. Prayer closet. A man sitting in jail as a direct consequence of allegations that he harmed a 9-year-old child has rebranded that jail cell as a spiritual retreat. He's not sitting with the weight of what he's accused of. He's not wrestling with what it means that a child came forward. He's having a really good time in his prayer closet. Jesus. Literally. Jesus, what are you doing here with these people? Little lightning, maybe. Jesus, little lightning, come on. Used to strike people down. Why did that stop? Like, these are clearly folks that might need a little striking down from the heavens. Because this is what they've convinced themselves of, Jesus. That diddling a 9-year-old girl is somehow, you know, and can all be wiped away in a prayer closet, otherwise known as solitary confinement in a jail. He's proud. Joseph says he read the entire book of Psalms. He does boot camp style workouts, push-ups, squats, dips on the edge of his concrete bed. That'll be good. You're going to have a nice firm body for Rufus here, who's going to show you what being a man is all about pretty soon. He talks about trimming up, cutting the bread, focusing on protein. He compares Bible translations with Kendra and tells her he likes the New Living Translation because it reads like a story. He tells her the story of Joseph in Genesis, and it resonates. A man thrown into prison who kept his faith and was eventually vindicated by God. He just happens to forget that there's no part of the Joseph story of him doing inappropriate things with minors. It's not part of the story. Even though you got kind of a similar name there, you're not quite the same guy. You're not. You're delusional. So to be clear, a man who, according to law enforcement, allegedly admitted twice to harming a child is sitting in his cell identifying with a biblical figure who was falsely imprisoned. Finding some sort of way to relate to that. He's writing himself in to a redemption arc where he is the hero and nobody on the other end of that phone says, Joseph, that's not your story. That's not what's going on here, bud. Then he reads a devotional about boundaries. I need you to hear this one. Joseph reads a passage about Exodus and Moses, Aaron, and a pharaoh and their different boundary failures. Moses let people step all over him. Aaron was swallowed by the crowd and built a golden calf. Pharaoh bulldozed everyone's boundaries because he saw himself as untouchable. Joseph walks Kendra through all of it. He's engaged. He's analytical. He finds that the three different approaches to boundaries is really interesting. He breaks down who had strong boundaries and who didn't, who let people influence them, who respected other people's limits and who didn't. A man charged with allegedly violating a 9-year-old's most basic fundamental sacred boundaries is sitting in a cell dissecting a devotional about biblical boundary failures, and it does not occur to him, not for 1 second, that the passage might have something to say about what he allegedly did. Not a flicker of recognition, not a pause, not a catch in his voice, because the system he was raised in has trained him to look inward towards his own growth, his own spiritual journey, his own relationship with God, and never outwardly towards the person he allegedly harmed. He can read the word boundaries and see a leadership session. The child doesn't enter the frame, and she never does. It's all about him. This is not just a religiously narcissistic family leaning on faith. This is a family built inside the Institute of Basic Life Principles, IBLP, a system that teaches confession to spiritual authority as a replacement for accountability to legal authority. Forgiveness is mandatory. Questioning the family structure is questioning God, so you don't do that. Every sin, no matter how severe, is a stumble on a redemption path, not an act with a human victim. That theology is why Joseph can call a jail cell a prayer closet. It's why he can read about boundaries without flinching. It's why every person who contacts him tells him to stay encouraged instead of telling him to face what he's accused of. The system is not failing. The system is doing exactly what it was designed to do. And then Jim Bob wrote a letter. Because of course he did. Jim Bob writes his son an email on March 25th. He opens with sorrow. He tells Joseph he's made terrible decisions. He says Joseph will likely face major consequences for several years to come. It's actually the most sensible of all of the Duggars, believe it or not. And right there, for one sentence, it almost sounds like a father willing to say the hard thing. Almost! Because then Jim Bob compares Joseph to King David. Of course he does. A man who, in Jim Bob's words, royally messed up. But repented and became a man after God's own heart. He compares him to the biblical Joseph, who made lemonade out of lemons in prison. He tells his son that God will bring other Christians into his life, that he can point people to Christ from behind bars, that God is not finished with his life. The alleged victim, again, does not appear in the email. Not mentioned, not grieved, not acknowledged as a human being who exists on this planet and was allegedly harmed by Jim Bob's son. The only characters in Jim Bob's version of events are Joseph, God, and the Duggar family. He's writing his son a redemption arc, and the child has been edited out before the story begins. Underneath all of this prayer, the calls reveal something else, something that should disturb you just as much. Because while a 14-year-old girl is navigating forensic interviews and a criminal investigation that's reshaped her entire life, the Duggar family is optimizing their rental income. Joseph tells Kendra to check his ChatGPT history for financial projections he'd been running before his arrest. Brothers-in-law John and Jed are stepping in to manage the business, including an Airbnb property. There's talk of getting a second property operational to increase Kendra's income stream. Talk of potentially selling. Talk of HELOC loans, power of attorney discussions, tax research that needs to be handed off. Kendra is fielding all of this, making decisions about rental properties and tax law and asset management while she's running on IVs and 3 hours of sleep and whatever scraps of food she can force down. And the family around her isn't saying, stop, you're in crisis. None of this matters right now. They're handing her spreadsheets and telling her to pray. The faith language is the emotional layer. Underneath it, the Duggar machine runs on asset protection, family labor, and operational continuity. A child was allegedly harmed. The family's response is project management. The system doesn't panic. It delegates. And the walls go up fast. Kendra warns Joseph in one call, do not trust anyone. There's one thing she's learned from all this. She says, do not trust a soul. She tells him she's boarding up the hatches. Even if someone seems nice, she can't trust them. Joseph agrees. Protect your words, he tells her. In another call, Kendra's alarmed about a phone call Joseph made to someone named Greg. She tells him, whatever you do, do not talk to Greg. Joseph assures her he didn't share anything, and she's relieved. Anything but Greg. I mean, think about what's happening here. The family's instinct in the face of allegations like this, that a child was harmed, again, is not to open up, cooperate, seek accountability, or reckon with how this even happened. The instinct is to fortify, seal the circle, control what gets out, board up the hatches. In their framing, the threat is the outside world, the media, the investigators, the people asking questions, pointing out the obvious. But the threat was never outside the circle. The threat was inside. That is literally what the charges are. And the family cannot see it because the system was built to make the outside world the enemy every single time. Well, Joseph reads Psalms in his prayer closet and Kendra boards up the hatches. Josh Duggar decides this is the moment. Too. From inside a federal correctional facility, Joshy, the original Duggar predator, releases a public statement through his attorney. Because of course he does. He says he's deeply saddened by the allegations against Joseph, and then he makes it about himself because, you know, he's learned so much. Josh says he understands the stigma of being accused. He says he lives with the painful reality of how false accusations, quote, can destroy a life. He says he understands how the targeting of a person for publicity can twist truth into sensationalized fiction. Yeah, because that's what it's all been, sensationalized fiction. When you can't deal with the trauma that you have instilled in another person's life, just call it sensationalized fiction. Keep calling it sensationalized fiction. Especially when Bubba finds you with a broomstick. Sensationalized fiction, Josh. That's what this is. You're not getting railed by a broomstick. It's sensationalized fiction. A man convicted by a federal jury, a man whose appeal was denied, a man who has exhausted every legal avenue available to him. And he's using his brother's arrest, an arrest based on alleged admissions Joseph himself reportedly made as a public platform to relitigate his own guilt. Josh Duggar, convicted processor of child CSAM abuse material, is now positioning himself as the family's authority on being falsely persecuted. And nobody corrects him. Nobody in the family pushes back. The statement joins the scripture, the Psalms, Jim Bob's email, and Anna's onboarding manual as just another voice telling the Duggars that they are the real victims in every story that involves them. Kendra delivers the family's verdict in one line. She tells Joseph, just know that everybody loves you, even if they're disappointed. Disappointed. That's the word the family. Disappointed is what you are when somebody cancels plans. Disappointed is what you feel when your team loses a game. It is not the word for what is alleged here. It is not the word you use when a man is accused of harming a 9-year-old child. But it is the word the family reaches for because the system they were raised in does not have vocabulary for what accountability actually sounds like. They have love, they have prayer, they have disappointment, they have seasons in the sun. And they have an alleged victim who does not exist in any of these conversations. Not one person across every call, every email, every message obtained from the Washington County Detention Center mentions her. Anna doesn't, Jim Bob doesn't, Austin doesn't, Kendra doesn't, Joseph certainly doesn't. A girl who is allegedly 9 years old on a family vacation in Panama City Beach, who's now 14 and reliving the worst moments of her catastrophic childhood through forensic interviews and a criminal process. And to this family, she's invisible. The only suffering that registers is Duggar suffering. The only pain that merits acknowledgement is Duggar pain. When police conducted a home study at Joseph and Kendra Duggar's residence after his arrest, they reportedly found locks on the outside of the children's bedroom doors. That's the allegation. That finding is what triggered Kendra's charges, 4 counts of second degree endangering the welfare of a minor and 4 counts of second degree false imprisonment. The Duggar family has seen exterior bedroom door locks before. Jim, Bob, and Michelle installed them in the original Duggar home, allegedly when Josh was a teenager, after he confessed to his parents that he had been harming his sisters. The locks were the family's solution back then. Keep the predator physically separated at night. Handle it internally. Move forward. And now, a generation later, with a different Duggar, the same hardware shows up with the doors. Got a system, all right. Josh Duggar, 2002, confesses to his parents. They wait over a year before telling anyone in law enforcement. And the trooper, they tell, a family friend named Joseph Hutchins, gives Josh a stern talking to. No official action. Hutchins later gets convicted on unrelated charges involving child CSM. What does that mean? It's like, again, birds of a feather. Like, why are there so many people involved in this within the circle of this group? I mean, I hope to God no one I know or interact with is involved in anything of this sort. But Jesus, there's a lot of people within a very small microcosm of folks. That's weird. That's not normal. So I hope to God it's not. 2 years after that meeting, the family started filming television specials. So, I mean, they knew. They knew. And they still thought, you know, we are the example. We're the example for the rest of the world. By 2008, they had the full series on TLC. They built the empire on top of a buried confession and ran it for a decade. Josh Duggar, 2015, the abuse becomes public. The show gets canceled. Josh Duggar, 2021, convicted by a federal jury, sentenced to 12 and a half years. Joseph, now 2026. Arrested on allegations involving a 9-year-old. Allegedly admits to it twice. Reads Psalms, calls his cell a prayer closet, reads devotionals about boundaries, and finds it really interesting. The name changes, the charges get worse, the playbook never does. Confess within the family, invoke God's forgiveness, redirect the scripture, protect the brand, board up the hatches, erase the victim, and somewhere, while Joseph Duggar dissects Moses and Aaron and the Pharaoh from his prayer closet, while Kendra measures her sleep score against Joyce, while Anna runs the intake manual she memorized the first time around, while Jim Bob writes redemption arcs and Josh lectures the world about false accusations from a federal prison cell, a 14-year-old girl waits for anyone in that family to say her name. They won't. The system wasn't built for that. All individuals referenced, obviously, are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. The charges and allegations described here are based on publicly available arrest affidavits, law enforcement press releases, and court records from Bay County, Florida, Washington County, Arkansas, and the Taneytown Police Department. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Delusion is an amazing thing. It's amazing what our brains are capable of, isn't it? How could you think that way? Good question. Good question. The mental gymnastics that we are capable of as a species is really quite stunning. Your thoughts in the comments and section. Like I said, Substack, YouTube links are in the description. Press subscribe wherever you get podcasts. You don't miss any of our conversations of this and the many stories we're following for you. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.